Well, it is my absolute pleasure, as it always is. And it's never often enough that I speak to the wonderful Dr. Carl Silver-Steven. Kia ora, Carl.
Kia ora.
I lament how long it's been since we spoke.
It's been ages, like 10 years.
It feels like it. But also, why lament when you can celebrate? I celebrate speaking to you today. And on this day that we're speaking, I mean, this is a pre-record, but this is the Thursday of the release of Pike River. And so I congratulate you too.
Thank you. Yeah, the release of both the film and the soundtrack, which is both wonderful to see and hear.
Yeah, I mean, in this. You've worked on, I mean, you've obviously done lots of different things, but these days, soundtracks are really your bag, and you are doing a bang up job of it and winning awards left, right, and centre and all of that stuff. I mean, this strikes me as perhaps one of the sort of thornier topics to tackle for a movie. Did you have a similar, Were you like, well, did it worry you at all coming into this project, making music that kind of respected the story? Somewhere there,
Absolutely.
is a question.
Absolutely it did. I mean, obviously the events of the Pike River tragedy, I mean, it's as bad a thing as can happen, really, and there's real people involved, and there's just so much pain and so on, and so telling that story at all is and being involved with telling that story is a sort of a very grave responsibility, and something I took and continue to take very seriously. I mean, I've done a lot of true stories, and I suppose I've done a lot of documentaries, right? So the first kind of stories that get told about bad things that happen is often a documentary, and so I suppose I'd already done a documentary on Pike River a few years ago, and so I'd already thought a lot about it and sort of like gotten a perspective on it, I suppose, artistically, and sort of put my feet in that water, and I've done a lot of since then, also quite difficult, like Black Hands, the series.
For sure.
Again, it's just so real and so horrible, and so my approach tends to be, I just think, well, what's a way to honor and respect the pain and the people, and how would I want a musician to approach it if it was a terrible thing that happened to me or my loved ones? You know what I mean? And I just that's all I can do is just try and like use my craft in the most sincere way I can to try and do something respectful of that sorrow and loss and those feelings and their complexity, and then I just have to like set that aside and start implementing that craft, I suppose.
It's almost like you've like you said the prayer, and then you can start the process.
Very much so, yeah.
So what was the process for this one?
Well, this one was unusual for me in that I came on quite late. So they had already made the film and done quite a beautiful part of it. So it was all filmed and put together, and they had a bunch of music that was all just placeholders. And the music that was placeholders was really fabulous. And yeah, like really great. Like, okay, this is literally Max Richter's best piece of music he ever wrote. and the same for like Gustavo Santaolalla and Lucovino Einaudi and all these kind of like the heroes, the Oscar winners of, you know, screen composition. And so there was that enormously high bar and an enormously tight timeline because I was on so late, like I said. And wow. so I just had to set any thoughts aside other than, okay, now I do this immediately.
Yeah.
and that was actually really great because it's amazing how ego and fears and hopes and all that sort of stuff can gum up the works, really, when it's just a desperate sprint to the finish line. You're just literally reaching for instruments or, you know, emailing players or, yeah, writing notes on a page. You just don't have time to second guess yourself at all. And so, I was quite amazed at what I was able to do when I just put my brain, my sort of overthinking self was in the boot and the making self was very much in the driver's seat. And so I look back and I'm pretty amazed. It's like, oh, I actually did some really quite good work and I didn't even know that I was doing it. I was so, just like in the zone.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things, isn't it? When sometimes when you're creating something, when you are in the flow state, I suppose, you know, you've done the mahi for the years prior and you've built yourself up to be this beautiful machine that can create, and it works. You're a machine that works.
It's great when it does work, because I'm not always a machine that works, but I do tend to love the challenge of the storytelling on these films, so I tend to work well in that context. You know, it's the machine grinds to a halt when I try and do some of my own stuff, because it's, you know, like then the horizons are too wide open and the timeline is too wide open and so on. But yeah, I do. You're right. I respond to that kind of when the parameters are locked in place, then it's like just leap in and start swimming. And Pike River was a particularly good example of that, because there's all these different musical styles. You know, there's very classical stuff that sort of speaks to, you know, courtrooms and the beehive and environments like that. And then there's
classic tension builders and stuff as well, eh?
Oh, more like, you know, because what these women were encountering when they sort of started to seek justice, I suppose, for what had happened, is all this officialdom and the sort of pomp and, you know, these institutions of power and process, they have their own kind of weight behind them, this weight of tradition, and the classical Western European classical music tradition actually really speaks to that because it's the same Western European, you know, it's that's where the all those legal processes and formalities and stuff come from. And so there's that sort of classical, like real classical type classical music. I mean, and then there's much more like stuff that needed to be a much more grassrootsy feel, you know, to do with, you know, the daily rhythms of getting up and going to work and doing work that, you know, is really hard physically, a real grind. And so that's, to me, is a different set of instruments. And then there's some of the more sort of churning, abstract, stuff that's more like experimental, I suppose. Definitely when you said about, you know, what sort of a machine I've become from the process of doing these sorts of things and different collaborations over the years, Pike River was a real workout, because because it was like, yeah, everything from just straight classical to fully experimental, and you know, ebo the banjo and run the distortion pedal back into itself and whatever.
Wow.
And then, you know, yeah, like a light melody on a mandolin or whatever. It could be anything, yeah.
Wow. And so did you find yourself like kind of wanting to, you know, like Max Richter, you know, mad respect to Max Richter and those other guys, but did you find yourself kind of flushing their ideas down the toilet and starting over, or did you try and take inspiration from what you've been given?
I think it's really important to do both. So it's really important to think, look, these people who are good storytellers, you know, Rob, the director, and Peter, the editor, they've put in this temp music for a reason, you know. Yep. There's something about it that is working for them to tell this beat of the story, and I yeah. absolutely need to respect that and not just kind of like roll my eyes and go, oh, it's Blimmin' Max Richter again, heard it before, you know, like yeah, like there's a reason it's working and there's something to it, you know. But then also you need to be able to move past it and improve upon it, and you yeah. need to work out what it's not doing that needs to be happening for this story to be told. And so, yeah, those are the two sort of hands of the process for me mm. with dealing with those music. It's that sort of, it's the respect and then it's the iconoclasm. But that speaks a lot to how I make music in general too. Like it's that sort of creation and destruction and the sort of reverence for tradition and the sort of finding the beauty in these amazing sort of cultural legacies of music creation, and also wanting to completely wreck that up and, you know, like, yeah, destroy the tradition and, you know, break every rule. And, you know, so I feel that push and pull is very much where I work, yeah.
I keep getting this picture in my mind of, have you seen the Korean original version of Old Boy?
Oh yeah, I just actually watched it with my mum. I was in Sweden for a couple of months, really, just earlier this year, and we watched tons of films. And she likes action films. She has restless legs, right? So if a film gets too boring or like sentimental, she just like gets antsy and wants to pace around. And so we watched like the Die Hard films, and she loved the first Die Hard movie. She somehow got to know all the names of all the like German villains. It's like, oh, Wolfgang, what's happened with him? Or yeah, so who knew that about her? But anyway, we watched Old Boy, and it was brutal and great. I love Park Chan-wook.
Yeah.
But what were you going to say about it?
Well, in normal conversation, I'd just be saying how great's that movie. But in the context of this, I just was reminded of the scene where he eats the live octopus, and and just thinking, knowing that behind the scenes he was a Buddhist who was a strict vegetarian, and he had to film that 4 times, I believe. And each time he did it, he said a prayer and apologized and thanked the octopus, and then ate it. So in some ways, that's the picture that came to mind, where, you know, you say your reverent prayer to Max Richter and then you eat him alive.
That's right. He is the octopus, and his tentacles are stuck to my face, just like in that film. Yeah, no, I mean, I think a big part of it, art making, and I think just dealing with the world in general, is kind of embracing complexity, you know. It's something I know, you know, Rob Thorne, who I've been lucky to collaborate with on, you know, projects, and, you know, he's a good pal. But I love that about his perspective on the world and art making and Te Ao Māori and stuff. Like, he's so willing to hold the complexity alive and not go like, I want just a simple solution. And I think that, yeah, that definitely speaks to what I see as the heart of, you know, storytelling, I suppose. You know, it's a complex world we live in. Complex things happen, and we're complex creatures and people. And having that reflected and not oversimplified and stereotyped is, I think, really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hats off to you for tackling this project. You know, Pike River for the second time, but in this instance, I can imagine it being an even sort of more heightened sense of, you know, you, it's on you somewhat to tell the story in this a little bit, just as, you know, you're, it's partially on you anyway to tell some of this story through the music and to respect the story, I suppose, more so. Yeah, I'm very, very excited to see the film, and we'll also be doing some headphone listening of the soundtrack. Is there a moment in the film that you're particularly proud of the music that you came up with, or if there's a moment we should watch out for, listen out
for? Well, to me, it's often about the whole arc, you know? It's about the journey, and so very often the moments I'm proudest or most proud of are when that arc sort of touches down, you know? So that final cue that literally takes us into the end credits and goes on and on and on, I'm very pleased with how that lands the arc. And I think it's an amazing story, yeah, that Rob was able to take something so awful, and something so bad that happened to so many people and families, and then the betrayal that followed it, and then turn that story somehow into a journey of hope and resilience and strength, and like, yeah, so I feel that's amazing, and I feel that whenever the music connects to that and speaks to that, I feel very proud of it.
Well done. I can't wait. I feel like I've probably reached my time allowance, but I is there a tune in particular that you want to get technical and nerdy on, you know? You know, when you mentioned putting distortion pedals back into themselves and eboing the banjo, are there any other little trickery moments you want to let us in on for this?
Well, I guess one of the challenging ones was this one called Roll Call. It wasn't like a sound design-y experimentation challenge, but it was a challenge because you've got a bagpipe player on screen playing bagpipes, and then you need this big sort of swelling emotional string cue, and that took a lot of trial and error, and we tried a few different bagpipe melodies, both the one performed by the bagpipist live on set, and then also ones that were played at the memorial for the Pike families and victims. We sort of had to honor the feeling as well, like the feeling that the characters needed to be having, and not be totally literal with no, this was the bagpipe of the day, you know. and so we ended up using this melody called Going Home, which it comes from a Dvorak symphony, and it's just this one little melody that occurs within that symphony, but then I kind of rewrote beneath it the full string arrangement to be completely different from either the bagpipe version or the Dvorak version, and so yeah, that's called Roll Call, and it's on the soundtrack, and so for people who like bagpipes, that's going to be a nice one. For people who dislike bagpipes, it's going to be a terrible listen. So I don't know, that's kind of exciting both ways.
Yeah, absolutely. If you keep everybody happy, what kind of job are you doing?
That's right.
Thank you very much, Carl. It is always beyond pleasurable to speak to you, and I say it every time. Oh, would love to catch up, but you'll just have to do another soundtrack, and we can catch up again.
Totally. Yeah. No. Really lovely to talk to you.
Awesome. Well, have a wonderful day, and I can't wait to see the film. Mad respect.
Sure. You too.
Here we go. That was Carl Solvay Stephen talking about Pike River movie soundtrack. You must go see the film. Rave reviews and obviously a very important story. And I had a phone call during that saying, is this also the guy from Queen Neptune? And sure enough, indeed, Carl has obviously, well, not obviously, but if you didn't know, Carl was also the scrawny rapper and Super Groove, and was fronted Drab Do Riffs, Heart Attack Alley, and has a very amazing solo music career. Some of his stuff's out on Sun Return, you should check out. But he also had a little duo with Kiwi called Queen Neptune, and I thought I'd play you a song. Thanks for the reminder. Another element of Carl's amazingness. Here he is. So this is the Queen's speech from Queen Neptune. And thanks again to Carl for the big old chat.